All right, hello everybody. Happy Friday. Happy hour. I'm glad to be here.
It is the happy hour.
Yes, it is.
Happy Friday.
It's always a very happy hour on Friday when it's 5 o'clock.
Super happy hour.
Well, glad to have you aboard. Thank you for tuning in. You know, I started this series with Louis Armstrong. I had no idea that I was going to be getting this deep as far as the number of shows that I would be dedicating
to
Louis.
Yes, you did.
I had
Stop
some idea
fibbing.
That... I thought that I'd be able to like summarize it maybe in 12 or less shows, but this is show number 12, and we're up to the year 1937. So I've got a few more to go after this.
Yep.
I know that as we move on through the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, we'll be able to move a little bit quicker. The pace will pick up because there's a lot of redundancy in what Louis performs.
Right.
But up until this point, it's very difficult. In fact, I think we'd be remiss if we went any faster than we did, because there's just so much that Louis was doing at this point in his career that was so incredibly important.
It's fresh.
Up until this show in particular, Louis had been the single most important jazz musician alive, maybe the most important musician, period, alive in the world at that time. The influence, if you've been listening to these shows, you know that the influence that he had was incalculable. Just, you can't even sum it up. Where we're picking up now, though, is in the latter half of the 1930s, around 1937. And what happens here is that Louis's career does begin to change significantly at this point in time. His new manager, Joe Glazer, who we had just mentioned for the first time last week, he was pretty much the focus of our show last week, he began to implement a number of maneuvers in order to increase Louis's exposure and help him make more money in the process, of course.
Right.
Now, Louis was already quite a famous person, but
right,
none of his other managers really did much to help him to make money. Joe was changing that. And it was wonderful for Louis to have pocket money and wonderful for him to have a manager that was actually, you know, helping him to make more money,
right,
to get paid for what he was worth. That was all good. But there were aspects of this that weren't always necessarily as good as it seemed, because there was parts of what Joe Glazer was expecting out of Louis that ended up, in a sense, taking advantage of Louis for who he was. If you've been listening to the show at all, the one thing that's very clear is that Louis aimed to please.
Right.
I've said it 100 times how, you know, his stage personality and his smile and his effervescence and the way that he would like really put himself out in a performance. He wasn't shucking and jiving. That was who he was. That was just Louis. But now he has a manager who knows that Louis is this way. So the manager wants to basically capitalize on it. So he tells Louis to smile and to put on the happy face, even when it's not necessarily the best thing for Louis to necessarily do. Even though it might compromise Louis. Now, Louis had gotten this far in his life, in his career, pretty much doing exactly what he wanted to do without really anybody telling him what to do. Now, he's got Joe Glazer, who's setting up all new avenues for him. And all of a sudden, Louis finds himself.
Yeah, and opening doors for him.
Right, but some of them basically put Louis in situations that I think compromised parts of his integrity. That's pretty much where the show is going to be focused. Now, I don't mean exactly, not all of them, because some of them were wonderful. But the first thing we want to cover is how Joe Glazer helped to get Louis involved in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great thing. Obviously, all of a sudden, Louis is going to be involved in movies. He's going to be playing with his band and getting exposure that way. But the fact is that Hollywood in 1937, getting Louis on there, although it sounds like it's a total coup for Joe Glazer to get this for Louis, there's an inadvertent backfiring thing that's going on, which is mostly due to like the intense racism that was probably about as intrinsic in the fantasy world of Hollywood as it was in Mississippi, only it was much more subtle in its deliberate ignorance.
Mm.
They're not going to come after you, say, with a bat in Hollywood, but they're going to do everything that they can to paint you into a corner. And the problem was exactly that. Louis is getting these roles. And this is an excerpt. I want you to basically... One of the first movies that Louis had gotten into is a movie called Pennies from Heaven. Obviously, it starred Bing Crosby.
Yes.
It was a big movie for Bing. And they bring Louis in And they were
label mates currently at this point, right?
And they're both, exactly, and they're label mates under Oxwell. Now, Bing loves Lewis. But of course, there are cultural differences. In 1937, they know that they're worlds apart. But they do what they can to work together. But Hollywood needs to paint them up as the, you know, being the worldly, you know, white singer who's going to be able to own a nightclub, and Lewis, the, you know, the ne'er-do-well black performer who's trying to figure out how to make things work underneath him. Mm-hmm. So Hollywood is essentially typecasting everybody, and Lewis, for the first time in his life, finds himself in a situation where he's not really sure that he would even be comfortable with it, but his manager insists that he...
That is a good move.
Right, it's a good move. You take it. You got to do it. Well, here's what I'm talking about. This is, again, I'm reading directly from Lawrence Berggren's book called Louis Armstrong, An Extravagant Life. In the picture, Crosby plays a wandering troubadour who resolves the difficulties of the less fortunate and later on inherits a haunted mansion that he converts into a nightclub. At this point, Lewis appears, casually dressed, and the two of them launch into some banter, dwelling on black inferiority and subservience, when Bing invites Lewis to perform at the new club for a salary of 10% of the business. "Is that enough?" Bing asks. "Well, yes and no," Lewis replies. "There's seven men in the band, and none of us knows how to divide 10% up by seven. So if you could only make it 7%, see what I mean?
Yeah.
What they're doing?
Right.
Bing laughs his, you know, hell fellow well-met laugh and agrees. Lewis exclaims, "I told them cats you'd do the right thing." So this isn't Lewis talking.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. But this is what Hollywood does to him and sets it up. Anyway, he had one role in the movie where he actually sings a song, which is part of the whole haunted house theme. And this is a track from that movie. It's called Skeleton in the Closet.
"Boy, don't you go in there. Come out of there, boy. Don't you know that house is haunted? It's an old deserted mansion on an old forgotten road where the better ghosts and goblins always hang out. One night they threw a party in a manor a la mode, and they cordially invited all the gang out. At a dark, bewitching hour, when the fun was loud and hearty, a notorious wallflower became the life of the party. The spooks were having their midnight fling. The merrymaking was in full swing. This rigged themselves into a cheerful trance. When the skeleton in the closet started to dance, now a goblin giggled with fiendish glee. A shout rang out from a big banshee. Amazement was in every ghostly glance. When the skeleton in the closet started to dance, all the witches were in stitches while his steps made rhythmic thumps, and they nearly dropped their broomstick when he tried to do the bumps. You never heard such an ugly laughter, such hilarious groan, when the skeleton in the closet rattled his bones.
Well, the music certainly was not disappointing.
No, definitely not.
The thing about this is that Lewis is one of the geniuses of his era. By the real definition of the word, coming up with things that nobody else had ever thought of and implementing them in ways that nobody else had been able to even consider or physically do. And on top of that, the guy was no dummy, obviously, after all these shows.
Right.
So it was kind of a shame that Hollywood would be setting him up in these situations where he was compromised. Right. I mean, soon after that, he was in another movie that was called Going Places. The movie starred Dick Powell and Ronald Reagan. And in this movie, they get Louis Armstrong to play a stable hand. Again, a working role. The name of his character is Uncle Tom.
Oh, my God.
Just ridiculous. And here's what they've got to say. The same book on that movie. The film's great gimmick was that a racehorse named Jeepers Creakers runs wild, except when Louis, the affable groom, sings to the animal. In one sequence, he croons the tune, which was Jeepers Creepers, composed by Harry Warren, named after the horse. The extraordinary thing about the scene was the heartfelt way Louis sings to that horse, and the way that the horse, apparently bewitched, responds to his voice. His singing is so endearing that he seems to charm the animal. On the strength of his performance, the song earned an Academy Award nomination, and given the harsh social climate in which the movie was made, the recognition seems like a minor miracle, which is true. Now, the thing is, Louis begins to get a little bit confident about maybe he can be himself in some of these roles.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets involved in another movie called Artists and Models, which features Jack Benny and Ida Lupino and Martha Ray. And what happens here is, again, let me put this in context now. This is going to sound weird, but in the 30s, Duke Ellington's band was getting roles in films.
Uh-huh.
The problem was, in Duke Ellington's band, there were two members who weren't black.
Right.
They're from South America or something. They might have been Hispanic. I don't even know exactly what they were. But for them to appear in the movie, those two guys
wear blackface.
Had to wear blackface so that they would all look black. They couldn't show a mixed band in a movie in the
30s. So ridiculous.
It was that crazy. So there was this unspoken rule where you could not really have a black person and a white person on screen in Hollywood on an equal level at this time.
Uh-huh.
It was just, but what Lewis decided to do in the movie Artists and Models, he performs a song and he sings it on trumpet. And the song is called Public Melody Number 1. And the words these are the words. Well, the music will, quote, sneak right up on you and kind of put the finger on you. So look out for Public Melody Number 1. You know, ain't no use hiding because I'm going to take you riding. Look out for Public Melody Number 1. Now, while he's singing this, Martha Ray, who's a white woman,
uh-huh,
she puts on like a copper-colored makeup to make herself look darker.
Uh-huh.
And she's dancing, literally writhing to the song.
Oh, that freaked a lot of people out.
And it freaked people out. What was going down was absolutely crazy. Listen to this. The controversy boiled throughout the summer of 1937. Joseph Breen, the man responsible for enforcing the strict production code on behalf of the studios, received letters warning of the perils of the scene. In Atlanta, after the mayor, school superintendent, and other elected officials previewed the movie, they conveyed their collective horror to Breen's office. Quote, "For a white woman to act with Negroes is a most certain offense to the South," they warned. "For anyone to act in as obscene a manner as Miss Ray does in this scene would offend taste anywhere, but in the good South and with Negroes, it will certainly be her finish. No one has a keener contempt for a white woman who descends to their level than the Negro himself," unquote.
Oh, that's how ignorant they are.
It's like racism in reverse, that they try to turn it around on themselves. And it's just, it's stunning. And in the middle of all this, here's Lewis singing this great song about his music and how cool it is. Let's hear the song, actually, that created all this trouble. Here's Public Melody Number 1.
There's a new kind of enemy on the loose today. Of the melody when it comes your way. It sort of sneaks right up on you, kind of puts the finger on you. So look out for Public Melody Number 1. If
it should be your luck when it meets you face to face. If your feet start trucking all around the place, it's no use to call on Hoover's G-men. Why, they're just a lot of ABC men when it comes to public melody number one. Oh, Frankenstein, a fun love joy, Jesse James, a teacher's pet, getting guns, only a toy, compared to notes shot from a hot cornet. So get undercover, you rhythm rascals, and run. Ah, oh, you dog, that ain't no use of hiding. I'm gonna take you riding. So look out for public melody number one.
Another wonderful track from Louis Armstrong called Public Melody Number One. And I hate to, I really wouldn't want my stories to color anybody's opinion of these songs. I'm trying to hopefully do the exact opposite, because I want to show how the music, how strong the music is and how well it survives despite some of the situations that Louis was put in. And in a way, Hollywood was yet, you know, yet another social barrier that Louis was confronted with, where he was one of the people on the cutting edge of having to break down stereotypes and to revise racist suppositions. Louis was one of the first people to need to do this in Hollywood. And it's kind of a shame, really, that Hollywood, with its production and its preconceived ideas of what culture is, that it would rob Louis of the one quality that he really never lost sight of previously, and which was his dignity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had to swallow it now because Joe Glaser was telling him to deal with it. Glaser was doing a lot of weird things, and some of them sounded like they would be flat out ridiculous. And yet, I thoroughly expected some of this next track to be absurdly dumb, but it's quite the opposite. This is how good Louis is. Glaser would get Louis involved with different cultural things. At the time, Hawaiian music was popular. So he teams Louis up with a Hawaiian group to play songs, you know, Hawaiian songs. And you're like, oh, no, that can't work. There's no way that can work. And I'm listening to these tracks and I'm stunned at how great they are. I wanted to play this song because it shocks me.
Is this like when the Exotica movement was kind of popular?
The real early birth of it. It's pre-World War II. Uh-huh. And I say the real Exotica movement kicked in after the whole Pacific event.
Right, like in the 50s.
Yeah, like the late 40s after World War II, I'd say it took off full bore. But there was definitely some interest in the Polynesian thing around 1930, in the late 30s. And that's what this was about. Glaser thought that they could capitalize on it. And there was a really famous ukulele player named Annie Iona, in Hawaii famous anyway. Uh-huh. And of course, and so he teamed Louis up with these guys. And he, for one of the first times probably in anybody's life, you'd be hearing a steel guitar. It was a brand new instrument, really, at this time. Unless you were from Hawaii, you've never heard this sort of thing. So you're imagining Lewis doing, you know, Hawaiian songs, recording Hawaiian songs in New York City, really, is what he's doing, with these guys, with a steel guitar. You think, this has got to be bad. Well, make up your own mind. I just think that this is one of the most charming things I've ever heard. It's Lewis Armstrong performing on a little bamboo bridge.
On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, beneath Hawaiian skies, I fell in love with you. On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, we found a paradise. Oh, paradise for two. While we were gazing in the water, the silvery ripples kissed the shore, and your reflections in the water seemed to say you'll be mine forevermore. On a little bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, you made my dreams come true, sweetheart, when I found you. While we were gazing in the water, the silvery ripples kissed the shore, and your reflection in the water seemed to say you'll be mine forevermore. Oh, on mid bamboo bridge by the waters of Kalua, you made my dreams come true, sweetheart, when I found you. Baba do that didn't say.
I guess I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't hear it, but I think that Lewis Armstrong is maybe one of the best Hawaiian music performers of all time, based upon
he's
that.
He's smart on how he played that with the mute.
Exactly. He's so subtle. He knows exactly how to approach the song without overkill. His, at this point in time, though, his level of taste is stunning. In fact, this next track, I think, is a superb example of just that, Heidi. How this is him with his band again, his own orchestra, with the New Orleans Rhythm Section, Pops Foster and Paul Barbarin or Barbarin on drums. Red Allen is on trumpet with them. Lewis Russell is leading the band. This is him back in New York in July of 1937. And what the song is about, I think it's a fairly ordinary song as far as songwriting goes. But Lewis invests it with such a perfect amount of I don't know. He just embodies the song and just performs it in a way that nobody could do it any better than him, I feel. Check this out from, again, July 7th, 1937. This is Lewis Armstrong performing a song called Sun Showers.
Sun showers
Never mind the rain, the sun will shine again. So sun showers. In a little while, the sky above will smile like laughter that follows your tears. Dark clouds of sorrow will soon be a sunny tomorrow. Wild sunflowers raise their little eyes up to the flaming sky, and sun showers leave as they part a rainbow in our arms. The gray skies soon will be clear, my dear. Those sun showers, Mom, are here.
Another beautiful song from Louis Armstrong called Sun Showers.
Just
reunited with his band, fronted by Louis Russell. Up until this point, they hadn't really had a chance to record for just about a year at this point. So Glazer had Louis so busy. So here they are back in the studio. But I mean, really, pretty much throughout this whole period, though, this time period, it was just for Louis, it was a total blur of live performances, one-night stands, appearances on sound stages in Hollywood, radio appearances were happening all over the place. Louis was constantly on the move, and
keeping his name out there,
right? And Glazer's attempt to basically, like I said, keep Louis with that happy face, smiling for everybody, being the effervescent performer. What he wanted also to do is get Louis to curtail his smoking, because up to now we've been talking a lot about Louis, the marijuana smoker.
Yes.
So Glazer attempted in vain to have him cut back or maybe even quit. And this is the one thing that Louis absolutely positively refused to take Glazer's advice on. He said the loudest argument that he ever had with him was over that. Glazer would insist that Louis would stop smoking, and Louis would say they'd go toe to toe. They'd be screaming at each other, with Louis telling him that he would not allow him to intervene with what he did on his own, with his own private life, to keep his nose out of that. That, because nothing's going to change in that regard. So that was it. Any attempts made to control Louis's life were in vain.
Louis is a natural guy, and he liked all herbal remedies.
Right, right, exactly. And whether it was his love of laxatives as well, the same thing.
Yeah, the Swiss Chris.
Swiss Chris was all about herbal. Well, for the first time in his career, though, as I said, Louis is like really truly a financial success. But, you know, the cast of this, you know, Glazer's Control, it began to put an aura of predictability a little bit onto Louis's career and his artistry. As I said, some of the pairings might have been questionable, like with the Hawaiian stuff. But I mean,
but it worked.
The proof is in the pudding, the way that it turns out. It was awesome. And Louis is bouncing back and forth so much between New York and California that it is a bit of a bar for him. This next track was actually recorded in California. It's a smaller version of his band. Same rhythm section, basically, but as I said, recorded in L.A. Here's Louis Armstrong performing On the Sunny Side of the Street.
your coat, grab your hat, leave worries on doorstep. Just direct your feet on sunny side of the street. Can't you hear that pitter-pat? Yes, happy tune, your step, baby. Life can be so sweet on sunny side of the street. I just walk in shit, baby, walk with those blues on red. I'm not afraid, yes, sir. Never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. No, sir. Gold dust at my feet on Sunshine Street.
Sunny side of the street. Of course, Louis Armstrong and his orchestra. Let me remind you that you were listening to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM out of Garden City, New York. We call the show How Music Changed on Friday, where we look at some of the most influential artists of the past 100 years, since the inception of recorded music, actually. And quite naturally, we are dedicating a significant number of our programs to Mr. Louis Armstrong, which is where we are right now.
He
with show number
it.
12. If you're interested in the series and you want to hear some of these shows on your own, at your own leisure, you can go to our website and check them out for yourself. You can go to shadupandlisten.com, shadupandlisten.com, and check out all 12 shows. The 11 are posted as of now, and this, the 12th show, will be posted before the end of the evening. I promise you that. So check it out if you want. Well, we're talking about how Joe Glazer is getting Lewis involved in all of these different things, some for better, some for worse. Most of them are really different media, movies, of course, as we had already discussed. But the one media that became a huge part of Lewis's life from this point forward is radio.
Oh.
One of the most important mediums of the time. Up until this point, there were no black hosts of any radio show. It just didn't happen. So Joe Glazer wanted to see if he could do something about that. And radio was actually much kinder to Lewis than the movies were, than Hollywood, because Lewis was in his medium. He's a performer on stage, performing music, able to be himself. There was really not much to worry about. And it turned out that Rudy Valley had a radio show. It was his show that was sponsored by Fleischmann's Yeast. And Rudy Valley had to go to Europe for some coronation thing with some, I don't know, something, you know, whatever circles Rudy Valley was traveling in, and they needed somebody to fill in. And it was suggested that perhaps Louis Armstrong could do it. So he gladly accepted. And as he did, taking the show over and calling it Harlem, where he was going to basically do what he did to basically show the swing music and its roots and where it came from, this made him the very first black man to host a national broadcast. Keep in mind now, if you remember just a few years ago, a few shows back, we had mentioned when Louis Armstrong was in New Orleans, and there was a white announcer who refused to even utter his name on the radio. Now Louis is hosting his own show.
Right.
So he really was breaking down barriers, and things were changing for him.
Left
that being
right.
said, though, man, there was still an awful lot of negativity. Lewis and his orchestra, said Variety magazine, quote, sounded like a boiler factory in swing time, and as such, could only be recommended to the most incurable addicts of Harlem stomp music in its most blatant pitch. Family tuner inners.
Sounds like a blatant endorsement to me.
Right, we should want to hear it. Family tuner inners, except swing-bitten youngsters, will be startled by the noise, even though the bandsmen are acknowledged experts in their particular field. Armstrong's throaty, almost unintelligible announcements do not help either, and he should refrain from singing. Well, I respectfully, maybe not so respectfully, absolutely disagree. Despite, you know, the ignorance of some of these reviewers, Lewis was way ahead of the times. 20 years in the future, in the mid-50s, Nat King Cole was trying to find sponsors for his television show and couldn't. His show was dropped. Here, Lewis did have a radio show. He had a sponsor in the 30s. Fleischmann's Yeast was hosting this program. And when he performed live, the shows were totally sold out in New York, Chicago, Philadelphia. So to hell with the critics. Lewis knew what he was up to. And because the radio shows had eventually become a huge part of his life, he'd be doing radio at this point in time once a week, twice a week for the next 10 years. And since a lot of those numbers will be redundant and we're not going to, of course, cover all of the radio shows, I think it would be great if what we did for the rest of this show was we take excerpts from Lewis's radio show of 1937, where he was the host, and you can hear what it was like to tune in 1937, 1938, and hear Louis Armstrong hosting his own show called Harlem. So you're going to hear different radio station call letters. You're going to hear a commercial from way back when, you know, don't go sending your self-addressed stamped envelopes like they're saying. This is 50 years old, folks, but here it is for the rest of the show. We're going to be playing excerpts from the Louis Armstrong's Fleischmann Yeast Radio Hour show called Harlem.
Fleischmann's Yeast presents Harlem. Makers of Fleischmann's Yeast bring you another fast and furious program featuring music by Louis Armstrong, the trumpet king of swing, comedy by Eddie Green and G.G. James, with words by Octavus Roy Cohen. And now, the head gate himself, Louis Armstrong and his orchestra.
Got no shoes on my feet. I ain't got nothing to eat, but I've got a heart full of rhythm. Not a dime to my name, but I'm rich just the same. I've got a heart full of rhythm. When the skies are gray and everything's wrong, I find my way by singing a song. Let the great think I'm small. Boy, I can laugh at them all. I've got a heart full of rhythm. Let it go. Now, folks, this is old Satchamouth swinging at you, playing one of them old good ones he wrote himself. A heart full of rhythm, yes. after you're gone. I'll keep cats in the way.
Thank you.
jams. A basement full of those very jams. Now that's what I like. Yes. When it's julep time, about 4:30, lovely ladies pass your door. Bless you, child. Come in for more. Now, boy, that's what I like. Windows, dreamy, dark-eyed southern mist. Let you rob her of a little kiss. That southern hospitality. I'm telling you, son. Yeah, brother. When she cuddles mighty close to you, at the moment that you want her to, boy, you can bet that southern hospitality. You'll find her dancing, entrancing. She sings and she plays. Why, she can pick one of them good old Derby winners. And she's not bad at cooking chicken dinners. When you need a little loving or two, and you finally give her heart to you, now you can bet all the tea in China, that's southern hospitality, girl. To swing up in Harlem on our off night.
On
Jack.
Off night? Oh, Darling Nelly.
That's right, Nelly Gray.
Hey,
what do you say? That's right, now you're talking. I'm a giant in on the chorus with you, Jim.
Oh, my poor Nelly Gray, they have taken you away, and I'll never see my darling anymore. I'll be sitting and I'm weeping all the day, 'cause you're gone from that old Kentucky shore.
That's what I'm talking about. Now my poor Nellie Gray, they have taken her away, and I'd never see my darling anymore. I am sitting by the river and weary all the day. She's gone from old Kentucky shore. Nellie Gray, them cats come and store her away. Don't look like I'm gonna ever see her anymore. Oh, baby, this doesn't matter. I'm sitting here by the river, all in a shiver. Oh, baby, old Kentucky. Oh, baby, this doesn't matter. That's the same thing I told Nellie, the love bug would get her, but she didn't believe it, so hit it, boys. 1, 2.
Oh,
Can take lessons from the world's greatest dance instructor in your own home at no cost whatever, because we will give you as a gift 20 lessons by Arthur Murray, lessons that would cost you $5 each if taken privately at Arthur Murray's famous studios, $100 for 20. Arthur Murray has put these 20 lessons into a big, handsome book. By these 20 lessons, he teaches you how to dance even if you don't know a thing about dancing now. And he carries you through until you're a polished dancer who can do the latest steps with perfect confidence. There's a young wife here who is going to tell us what these lessons did for her husband.
My husband used to be the worst stick in the mud about dancing. It was all I could do to drag him out on the dance floor. And when I finally got him out there, he was terrible. I was hoping that if he danced a bit, he'd get better, but he didn't. And then we got
wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of what the commercials were like even back then for Lewis's show. But there you had it.
I think you can still take dance lessons at Arthur Murray's.
Perhaps you can. I just wanted our audience to get a taste of what it was like to hear Louis Armstrong live on the radio for his own program. That was all taken from the Fleischmann's Yeast Show. As I had said, it started in 1937. It ran for a very short time. It only ran from April until the end of May for about 6 different weeks. And what we heard was excerpts from the various programs from when that show had ran. What we had heard besides the program intro, we heard Lewis performing I've Got a Heart Full of Rhythm, After You've Gone, Pennies from Heaven, That's What I Like. Then we heard him with the Mills Brothers performing Darling Nellie Gray. And then we heard that swinging instrumental called Washington and Lee Swing. Well, hope you enjoyed that. I think that gives us all about as much of a flavor for what Lewis's live show was like in 1937 as we're likely to get. And it's very indicative of what he'd be doing for the next 10 years of his life with his radio programs. And I hope you can join us.
As we all know, there's nothing better than live radio.
That's well said. Well said. I'm glad you said it. Well, I hope you can join us again next week as we bring you our 13th episode dedicated to the music of Louis Armstrong. And I also hope that you can stay tuned for the next couple of hours with Chad DePasquale as he comes on air to bring us his wonderful program, my favorite program on WHPC, maybe other than me, but it's up there. It's up there. And we'll leave you with this. Here's Louis Armstrong's sign-off from his show Harlem with Fleischmann's. Take care, everybody. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Next week, the makers of Fleischmann's Yeast present another half hour with music by Louis Armstrong and his orchestra, comedy by Eddie Green and G.G. James, words by Octavius Roy Cohen. And now...
And this is Louis Fatsmore Armstrong saying good night, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, sir. Fleischmann program, announced by Charles Lyon, came to you tonight from Chicago. This is the Blue Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
W.